This season of the WNBA has gone to new heights.
And that means the playoffs are going to be hotter than ever.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson.
And all WNBA season long, we've brought you analysis and interviews with some of your favorite court queens.
So for the finals, you know we're bringing takes you can only find in this courtroom.
Listen to and follow Queens of the Court, a WNBA podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike DeTellier along with Charlie Long in studio, trying to get in touch with Blake Ruffino to have him on and talk to us a little bit about LSU baseball and football. And if you listened to Sports Talk last night, you heard Pete Jenkins unfiltered, certainly about LSU's issues up front along the defensive line, and he also felt that corner would be a major question marks going into the 2024 season. He's a big fan of Blake Baker as defensive coordinator, and certainly Bo Davis, the defensive line coach. And Bo learned a lot about what he knows today from Pete, but he brought up some interesting comments that he felt as though the talent level and the talent depth along the defensive line is not there for LSU. And he said, last year, I'm not sure we had a starter at corner. He said, you might have one starter this year, but he was concerned about the cornerback group coming into the 2024 season. So, man, this is coming from a guy that's been around and seen a lot of football, and he's sort of giving you already a little bit of the flair. He shot the gun that, hey, LSU's defensive front, especially in the middle, and that cornerback are vulnerable as far as he's concerned. He did think the offense would roll. He thought a lot of Garrett at quarterback. He thinks, and I feel the same way, their strength is going to be along the offensive line. Got some really good young receivers. He liked the linebacker core with Greg Penn, with Whit Weeks, Hal Perkins. He felt as though maybe they overloaded, they put a little bit too much in the shot glass with Perkins last year and sort of overloaded him with different responsibilities. He felt good about that defensively and at safety, but he raised some major concerns at defensive tackle, also at corner, Charlie.
For those that didn't hear it, Pete raved about Bo Davis, and he's raved about him since he became the hire from Texas to LSU, kind of coming back home. And so the thing about Bo Davis, though, that he mentioned was that you can be a great coach, but you have to have the horses, right? And LSU doesn't have it right now. And we've talked with Blake about, you know, what he saw from spring football with LSU, that the defensive line was getting gashed. And that's not a good sign. Like, the offensive line is the strength of the team. That's understandable. But you want it to be, as Bobby always says, kind of 50-50 in practice with each other. And it wasn't anything close to that. It sounded like LSU's run game and the offensive line was straight up dominating the defensive line.
It was more like 80-20.
So that's kind of the biggest question mark on the team. You talked about cornerback. He said that there's basically one real cornerback on this team. But he kind of mentioned that the depth for LSU's defensive line just isn't there. And it wasn't really there last year either. But a thing that stood out from, you know, y'all's interview with him was when he talked about Bo Davis being the guy when he signed on, that, you know, had these guys like Mason Smith and Mekhi Wingo known that Bo Davis was going to be their coach in 2024, they may have not entered the draft.
Yeah, that was a great point. And we've heard Pete talk about that before. There was a lot of uncertainty. I know Mason had spoke to him about, what do you think? And is Bo going to be the new defensive line coach? And you know, Pete was like, I'm not sure. I'm not doing the negotiations here. But it did bring up a big point. And we have on with us on our Oakland Hard Jewelers Talking Text line from the Are You Serious Sports Network, Blake Ruffino. Blake, Charlie and I were talking about this, and we heard Pete Jenkins last night.
We're concerned, Blake.
And he drew it up, that defensive tackle, cornerback, major concerns for him as LSU enters the 2024 season. He spoke glowingly. He thought the safety position has been upgraded, and he liked what they had at linebacker with Penn and Weeks and Perkins, and he said he thought that maybe it was overloaded mentally for Perkins last year, and some of that's been taken off. And I know he likes Blake Baker quite a bit, and so would Bo Davis. But I think that if you had tempers a little bit about that, Pete didn't qualm him last night the way he spoke.
Yeah, Mike, and I mean, some of the stuff that he said, I mean, look, as my grandpappy once said, when you get that old, son, I don't have time to lie. So, you know, he's not sugarcoating anything. Look, when you're getting into, I mean, look, I don't mean to sugarcoat it, Mike and Charlie, but they got into a bidding war for a big-time defensive tackle in the spring portal and missed. I mean, it should have showed everybody how concerned they were. It doesn't matter, at least not to me, what they say on the preface, but what their actions have showed. I mean, Mike, here's the truth, okay? When we were out there for spring practice, they got pushed around, and the excuse was, oh, well, we have a really good offensive line. Okay, well, that's true. It's not the only good offensive line you're going to face either. So I don't know, Mike. I have a concern. Now, tonight it's interesting you brought a corner. I'm hearing during the summer, like 7-on-7 stuff that these guys are doing, that they're getting beat really bad. And some of the freshmen are having to take reps. So I don't know, Mike. I don't know if it's just – I don't know what to expect, to be honest.
Yeah, and that was something, you know, Pete had told me even before we got on the air. He said, Mike, defensive tackle spot is really a concern. He said, I think they got the edge guys. He said, I think they got the guys that can get after the passer a little bit better. And he said, they will be more aggressive on defense than they were a year ago. But he said, I'm just telling you, they got one corner. And he said, you know, you need at least four. Because you play so much nickel and dime, and somebody's going to eventually get hurt. So you just don't need three guys. You need four. He said, I think they got one guy. And you're going to play freshman corners? And he brought that up over the air. That's what you might be seeing at LSU this year.
Well, I mean, Mike, you had P.J. Woodland, who started at one corner as a freshman. I mean, the kid had been there for 4 weeks. You know, like, I mean, I hate to, you know, I'm not trying to poo-poo. I don't think anybody's trying to mitigate or talk ill about the guys that are there. But, Mike, the truth was there were three DBs that stood out during spring. P.J. Woodland and Deshaun McBride. Maybe you could talk about some of the stuff that you saw from Joel Rogers, who was coming off an injury. But, Mike, there was a reason why those guys were getting first-team reps that quickly. They don't have a better safety, cover safety on that team than Deshaun McBride. They don't have one. Look, and I don't mean, again, just trying to, you know, because when you talk about players, it gets, you know, people get upset, but they don't. So, I mean, Mike, it's going to be a big concern. I think, you know, like, people are going to have to give Corey a lot, you know, some leeway here. They're going to have to give Blake a lot of leeway. But, Mike, here's the thing, too. We can't be passive. And like you mentioned, Blake Baker's not going to sit on his heels. I mean, if you can get out the quarterback, you can make him make bad decisions. The problem, though, man, is, look, you got Ole Miss in prime time at night with a quarterback that's going into another year of starting. He might not be making bad decisions. So it just comes to a part where I do think that, Mike, they did hit on some of this personnel in this defensive freshman class. But are you going to run two or three guys out there? I mean – Ashton Stamps is the best practice player I've seen, legitimately. Kid can't turn it on. So, I don't know.
I know he told me this. Man, Bo sees a big difference between having Byron Murphy and Tavondre Sweat at Texas inside than what he's got at LSU.
That was
Pete's comment. Man, it's a big difference between those two guys and what he's got at LSU. And he says, listen, he's a terrific coach, but you're a better coach when you got better players. And he said, it's got to be a point of emphasis. And I know he told me he brought that up to Brian Kelly. You've got to be able to kind of circle the wagons here to get better personnel along the defensive line. Blake, when's the last time – I know maybe the last couple of years we've brought this up, but before then, that was the strength of this team defensively. It was defensive line. It was that corner. And now, those are the weaknesses of your team.
Yeah, I mean, Mike, but bottom line is you're just getting beat. Now, I do think the state has been down somewhat. Now, the question becomes, what does any of these freshmen give you? You know, does Don McKinley give you anything? But, Mike, he's not enough, and you're just getting beaten there, right? I mean, Mike, Texas had two big-time defensive tackles going to the draft. They got four interior defensive tackles in the portal. It just feels like that they had a plan of attack, which I'm not trying to point any fingers. You did not. I've been saying this, and I've been getting ridiculed on it, but it is what it is. If you're that bad in the interior, you're going to have to be more multiple, in my opinion. Yeah. You're going to have to go maybe to a three-man front. Be more multiple. I mean, I'm not saying go crazy West Virginia 3-3-5 stack, but I mean, Mike, you ran it against Jane Daniels. It's not like Blake Baker didn't run it last year versus Ohio State. I mean, he did it three times in games that we saw him on film. Well, why did he do that? So, I, Mike, they're going to get beat there badly. And I don't know. You better score a lot. By the way, I put $100 on the 66.5 point over at USC last week, just so people know.
Yeah, I would think that might not be too bad of a bet, because I have seen USC's defense too. It ain't nothing to write home to mom about. We got to jump to.
Mike, here's the question.
Go ahead.
Who's got a better defensive line, us or them?
Man, USC's had a lot of losses along the defensive line too, but I'd give them probably a slight edge.
And that's my point. You know, like, that's where you're at. We talk about USC like, hey, man, they're bad defensively. So are you.
Yeah.
I mean, so are you. I mean, let's point the finger at us now, too.
Week one barn burner there?
Yeah. Bet the over.
Yeah, I think so. Man,
last year we did it with USC. Bob and I had talked about it. He said, Mike, you know, you got more luck than sense. But I think of the 12 games, I think 10 of them, if you'd have bet on USC, were over. 10 of the 12 regular season games. That's how bad defensively they were. Now, again, you had Caleb, and he could put you up points, but it also shows you your defense was lousy. I mean, it was bad. And I don't see that all of a sudden getting better at USC. And for LSU, it's a similar tale. It's not all of a sudden going to get better at cornerback and along the defensive line.
No, you're not. You're not. I mean, Mike, the truth is the programs are in a lot of the same positions here, ironically. Heisman Trophy winning quarterback leaves. You have multiple receivers that got drafted. Now, LSU obviously had better ones, but multiple receivers that went into the draft and got drafted that have left over the last couple of years. You have a defensive coordinator that you've had to fire. Oh, by the way, you both need defensive linemen and corners really badly. Oh, and both head coaches are going into their third year. I mean, ironically, they're a lot alike, and there's a lot of similarities. Mike, I don't have a lot of faith at the current moment at what they're doing on one side of the football. Now, I don't know if they run the ball a little bit more to kill clock and hold on to the football a little bit. I don't know. But what I do know is you might need to a little. I mean, if you have the best offensive line in the country with what you're putting out there and you think that you do, you're going to have to run the ball a little bit more and play a little bit of keep away. Mike, last year, Sage Ryan at corner, midway through the year, think about this. Pro Football Focus put this up today. Midway through the year, he goes to corner. He played 401 snaps in 8 games at corner. So, I mean, there comes a point in time where, like, yeah, you're scoring a lot, but your defense can't stop anything, and you're throwing them right back out there, too. Now, a lot of people disagree with me on that, but
that's true.
I mean, on the ball.
Yeah, he laughed about it last night. He said, man, they had just scored on a 3-play drive. Jaden comes off the field, and he said, I grabbed him. I told him, I said, Jaden, I love you, but I wish you'd have made this a 13-play drive instead of a 3. He said, because I got to put my defense back out there.
This season of the WNBA has gone to new heights.
And that means the playoffs are going to be hotter than ever.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson.
And all WNBA season long, we've brought you analysis and interviews with some of your favorite court queens.
So for the finals, you know we're bringing takes you can only find in this courtroom.
Listen to and follow Queens of the Court, a WNBA podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're looking at LSU on the baseball side of things, and Jay Johnson made, I think, a great comment about this isn't program-driven for 2 or 3 years. It's sort of 1 year at a time because of the losses you're going to have and people you're going to bring in. For people that don't know a lot about Chris Stanfield, who they got from Auburn today, and also the pitcher Devin Sharon from Mount St. Mary's, a little bit about that. We see a lot of comings and goings now in LSU baseball. But you know what, Blake? I think this is going to be the norm. This is what we're going to see each and every year at LSU.
Yeah, I mean, my opinion is if you want to follow, like, baseball portal news is the best. Following the portal is arguably the best because you have a kid, and Mike, he's coming from Mount St. Mary. Jesus can't find Mount St. Mary, okay? So, I mean, you have a kid that was a late bloomer, grew 5 inches going into his freshman season, then starts, you know, they get out to winter or coming out of winter break. The kid comes back and he's throwing 98. So it's like, I mean, baseball's just a different beast. Now, the thing is, they've gotten a lot of contact guys. They got a lot of speed, which is actually, ironically, not what Jay has done. But, Mike, they're about to, you know, I think start clamping down and going to try to get some power bats, and they're bringing in some big arms. There's a very strong potential with George returning. Let's see what happens with Griffin Herring. I'm not going to say that this roster talent-wise will be better than last year because Bear Jones and Tommy White probably are out. But, man, you're replacing a lot of talent, and it is the norm. Mike, he's not – I mean, two-thirds of his last two classes are not on the team anymore. I mean, what is he supposed to do? I mean, and now he has arguably one of the best sophomores in the country because his birthday falls on the cutoff date that he can go into the draft. So now he's losing a sophomore that normally he would have here for 3 years. So it's tough, but they do have a lot of talent. The arms have been really good, though. The Cowan kid from Wofford, look, you throw 114 innings and 24 walks, that plays anywhere. Because, look, the strike zone's not going to be that much more elite in the SEC, which it's not, than the conference in the SoCon that he was in. He doesn't walk kids, he strikes out a lot, and he's going to get guys to hit a lot of ground balls. We saw that in the regional that we were in. So a lot of big-time arms. They need some power, though.
Yeah, looking at Cowan, and I mean, obviously jump to the big-time power bat that they picked up from Indiana State in just a second here, but Cowan is an interesting one because he kind of projects as basically a weekend rotation guy just based off of what he did at Wofford. He was their ace, but he was also a workhorse. I mean, 110 innings pitched speaks for itself. 10-2 record, 124 strikeouts, as you mentioned, 3 complete games as well. And that was in 17 starts, by the way, Blake. So, I mean, just doing the math, he's going over 6 innings per start. So that's just what Wofford had from him last year. He was their workhorse. And, I mean, he projects as a potential weekend guy that Jay can kind of plug and play just based off of what he did at Wofford this past year. But as far as your kind of power bat synopsis, I want to look at Indiana State first baseman Luis Hernandez, who also played a little bit of catcher, hit .359, 23 home runs, 76 RBI last year for the Sycamores, who had a fantastic year. They were definitely in the hosting conversation. They obviously didn't get a host, and they got sent to #2 Kentucky, which just wasn't great for them. But Luis Hernandez, and I think he kind of projects as a nice replacement bat, especially if Jared Jones does, in fact, leave.
No doubt, Charlie. And, you know, the crazy thing is the kid still, you know, could be drafted, you know. And so do I think he's going to be at LSU? Yes. The problem is, you know, does something happen within the next 2 weeks that changes that? Now, the crazy thing, I think, Charlie, was, now I don't have the exact number in front of me, but he hit over 400 with runners in scoring position. So not only is he, you know, has a high average, he hit a lot of home runs, but obviously the RBI numbers were ridiculous, especially when he's hitting that well with guys on base, putting the ball in play. So he's been really good. I hope that he sticks. I do wonder, Charlie, though, if they're not going to maybe let him DH play first and look for a veteran catcher in the portal, mainly just for a defensive side of things, because Blaze Priester does come in. He can hit. He can really hit. You know, he's a lot like Hayden Travinsky, though. So you just get to a place where you hope the kid sticks, but if he does, then you do have some real power there if they both stay.
So we talked a little bit about the guys that they're bringing in. Let's just recap some of the pieces that they've lost as well. Obviously, a lot of pitchers have left the program, but not too many guys that had big volume for LSU, I would say. Like, Sam Dutton sticks out. Cam Johnson was super talented, but he never really had his
moment.
He couldn't
find the strike zone.
He really struggled with command. I mean, all the talent in the world, so someone's going to get him, and if they develop him, they'll have a really strong pitcher. Javon Coleman leaving was pretty surprising. Same thing with Aiden Moffitt. But a couple of these guys just don't really stand out. Brady Neal and Paxton Kling. And I want to bring you back, you know, before the season started, we talked with Joe Healy from D1 Baseball, and he said LSU will go as far as their sophomores take them. Obviously, Jared Jones had a fantastic season, and he's going to be an MLB draft prospect that, as you mentioned, will probably be gone. So it's unfortunate, draft-eligible sophomore. Paxton Kling had all the tools in the world. He just couldn't put it together this year. And Brady Neal was the definition of up and down. He was a roller coaster ride. So what are your kind of thoughts about the players that they've lost in the portal so far?
I think Jay thought he needed to shake up, honestly. And look, I hate it for Paxton. He's a great kid. You know, just even having conversations with him, I think he's a great kid. Would not be surprised if he stayed in the SEC, you know, because there is a former LSU coach that's made his way back, and I'm not talking about Les. But the bottom line with Kling was, it's obviously he just couldn't produce. Now, Brady Neal is interesting. Now, I think that Brady was going into, you know, talking with Jay going into next season about his role being more significant, and I don't think that Jay was willing to commit to that. We put on our website last week on our forum, Charlie, and I kind of just laid out some things that we had been hearing about Brady, and that, you know, I gave it a 90% chance they hit the portal. I just don't think that, you know, Jay wanted to rely on him to catch, maybe even look at another position. He didn't want to do that, and I think, you know, he moves on. I know it surprises some people. The truth is that Brady Neal hit 200 points less against P4 pitching, which, you know, we don't have P5 conferences, but against P4 pitching, it was 200 points lower than he was against mid-major pitching. And I'm not – that's not a knock at him, but, like, you look at, like, Michael Braswell, you look at Jared Jones, those numbers either are going to stay the exact same or they're going to go up. I mean, Tommy Tanks had more home runs against the SEC almost than anybody, but he didn't – I mean, he kind of floundered sometimes in midweek. Maybe he just wasn't focused. It was opposite for Brady, and look, that last regional weekend was rough. I think 7 passed balls by him in 2 games is just not enough. It's not good enough in the SEC. So, like I'm saying, Charlie, I really believe that they're going to go after a veteran catcher. Might not be able to hit, but a guy that can really be a staple back there and try to help him develop at the plate. Because Priester's going to come in and, I mean, look, the kid hit just nukes at JUCO last year. He was an All-American. Could have been the JUCO player of the year, some believe. But he's more Hayden. He's going to be at the plate trying to swing for the fence, and that's just him. So I think that's where they go. Kling, I mean, look, man, the kid that they got today from Auburn completely replaces anything that Kling was going to be able to do for you. So I think you upgraded, and I think you're going to upgrade at that position. I know it's a worry, but I think you upgrade because I do think that there's 3 defensive catchers in the portal, one from upstate, whose name slips me at the current moment, that's, you know, a lot of people are after just to be defensive. So we'll see, man. Jay's going to have to go probably get 5 more dudes in the portal, which is crazy because then you'll be at 11, and in baseball, that's insane.
Blake, thanks so much for joining us. All I can tell you is never a dull moment at LSU, baby.
Hey,
it keeps you content-wise going for a while in those weeks where there's not a lot going.
Hey, Mike, I ain't going to lie. I'm glad this hit in June and not September because I got other stuff I got to talk about in September.
You know? I hear you, brother. I hear you. Thanks so much, Blake. Appreciate it, buddy.
Y'all have a good one.
Thanks, brother. Blake.
Blake Ruffino, founder and CEO of Are You Serious Sports Network, covering the LSU Tigers.
This season of the WNBA has gone to new heights.
And that means the playoffs are going to be hotter than ever.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson.
And all WNBA season long, we've brought you analysis and interviews with some of your favorite court queens.
So for the finals, you know we're bringing takes you can only find in this courtroom.
Listen to and follow Queens of the Court, a WNBA podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.